You're listening to Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
It's always nice when the Astros get a win, a couple wins in the Bronx. They did split the series with the Yankees, but man, that no-no was fun. A combined no-hitter for the Astros. They made history at Yankee Stadium. It's usually the bullpen, guys, that's been the strong suit of this team. Wasn't really the case over the weekend. Luckily, Ryan Pressly was able to redeem himself. And all that these games did, even though there was a lack of offense from the Yankees, all this did was make me excited for October. I'm Vanessa Richardson. Josh Beard is in for Paul Gallant. Sean Mapes behind the glass, as always. Guys, what do we think of the Astros this weekend?
The thing that we didn't get to touch on earlier that I really want to talk about is just the month that Yordan Alvarez has had.
Yeah. And happy birthday to him, by the way, 25.
Yep, 25 years old, which is insane that he's doing what he's doing at 25 and that they just signed him to a long-term contract, which is incredible. The consistency of pitching wasn't there, but they did have the great outings. The no-hitter was incredible. But Yordan Alvarez's month of June has been absolutely insane so far. His numbers over this month, and there's only a few days left to go, his numbers over this month are, they won't reach it, but they're dangerously close to hitting areas that are like top 10 best months all time for hitters. Like, being able to go up there with the names like Frank Thomas and Todd Helton and Barry, if you look at the top 10 best months for a hitter of all time in Major League Baseball, Barry Bonds has like five of them. He's like somewhere within that top 10, Barry Bonds has like five of them. But Yordan's numbers through the month of June have just been absolutely insane. Absolutely insane. His batting average, .411. His on-base percentage, .488. Slugging percentage, .822. And his OPS is 1.31. That's nuts. 8 home runs, 26 RBI in that stretch. And he's continued to do, that over this weekend. And so that's what makes me excited for October. When you look at the month that Yordan's having and what he can build on top of this, I mean, if you look at those guys who had those top 10 months of all time, it was in July and August when they had them. And Yordan's doing it in June. And he just looks like he's starting to hit this stride that's going to continue to go. If you put it into perspective what Yordan's doing right now to somebody current, His OPS of 1.31 is over Mike Trout, who is the leader in pretty much every statistic except for OPS, overall OPS right now. Mike Trout and Yordan Alvarez are tied. But Mike Trout's batting .257, .366, .714. And Yordan's blowing him out of the water in every single category this month. And that's the best hitter in baseball. That was the best hitter in baseball. It is now Yordan. And he's doing things that not only have we not seen anybody else do this season so far in the month of June.
I'm glad that you brought him up. Because
he's great.
It's amazing that you can still think that he's a little bit underrated.
Right.
And Houston's not a small market. I'm not saying that. But when you take inventory of the teams that are going to get the most attention, the Dodgers, the Yankees, and of course the Angels, just because of the star power on that team, the Astros, other than their cheating controversy, are not getting the same amount of respect as the other teams. So the Angels fire their manager. The Phillies fire their manager. The Astros split the series with the Yankees. I don't want to say that the Astros have some chips on their shoulders or that they were completely underrated. But I got to tell you, I don't know if it's because they had a little bit of a slump at the beginning of the year. Altuve and Bregman obviously had their struggles. Yordan for a hot second when he came back from that illness.
Right.
But I think that people are starting to see that this team is going to be really dangerous in the playoffs. I anticipate more boos. I anticipate, a couple of trash cans. But at this point with this team, I don't think people can deny that they're so damn good.
No, I really feel like nationally people are just starting to kind of step into the realm of, oh my God, the Astros are still the Astros, and they're still one of the best teams, if not the best team in baseball. You know, people have been talking about the Yankees for so much this year overall, right? Everybody wants the Yankees to be good again. And the other teams, people are talking about the Dodgers, people are talking about the Phillies, people are talking about the Mets. And nationally, the conversation hasn't really been around the Astros at all. Well, earlier today, or maybe it was yesterday, Talkin' Yanks was saying positive things about Jose Altuve on their Twitter account, which is crazy
insane
to see. And you saw updated odds, like the updated odds and fan polls of who everybody thinks is going to win the World Series. There are polls out there, pretty big ones, where they have people have the Astros as the favorite to win the World Series right now. And that's, you're starting to finally see everybody nationally start to realize they have a couple. You think about Kyle Tucker. Nobody realizes this. Kyle Tucker is in the top five in WAR right now. Kyle Tucker is one of the best overall. Obviously, he's had his slumps at the plate, but overall, Kyle Tucker is one of the best players in baseball right now. And a lot of people don't realize the stats that he's putting out there. Yordan obviously is one of the best players in baseball. And so now, if you talk about after this weekend what we saw, if you talk about Bregman starting to pull himself out of a slump, and Bregman's now, one thing I need him to do is I need him to not throw the ball like me on third base. I need him to actually like
still
snag
sore
it
from your yeah, outing yesterday.
Yeah,
still,
I need him to snag it and throw it to first base accurately. But at the plate, he's starting to look like himself again. He's starting to look like old Alex Bregman. And shame on me for ever considering the fact that maybe it's time to look at Alex Bregman long term and figure out what you're trying to do with him. No, you keep a guy like that in the house.
No, I mean, I think that, but
he heard me say that. And
yeah,
I like this. I
it
like
was the motivation.
If I will take a thank you letter in the mail, Alex,
you'll
I'll
take
send
a,
my address.
A jar of the Breggy salsa.
Yeah, please.
Guys, shout out to Ole Miss. Hottie Toddy, as they say, the Fighting Maria Martins. My friend Maria, who's in Atlanta, went to Ole Miss. Winning the College World Series. This is a team that barely made the playoffs, and then they were able to have this resurgence. How invested were you guys in the College World Series? It wasn't something that I would sit down to watch, but if it was on, I would have it on in the background.
I was very invested
really?
For a few games, just because the Aggies were in it.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Yeah, so I was very
what
invested.
What round did they lose?
They lost in the Final Four.
Gotcha.
So they lost to Oklahoma. And Oklahoma, they in the double elimination round, Oklahoma went on to then go against Ole Miss. So they lost. They made it to the Final Four. They lost to Oklahoma once, and then they demolished Texas. It was so beautiful to watch. And then, sorry, I'm sorry, Sean. I just had to do it.
You're going to ask me how much I watched.
Yeah,
didn't
how
watch
much
any.
Did you?
Didn't watch
too,
any.
You didn't.
Too
watch
busy,
none.
Too busy counting those recruits for football.
Okay.
2023.
He was building his Arch Manning shrine.
I was busy texting a 17-year-old. No, wait. Never mind.
Hello. Whoa.
Sliding in Arch's DMs.
People are weird like that.
Yeah, they are. They are. That freaks me out. But I was invested all the way through. You know, they beat Texas, they beat Notre Dame, then they went against Oklahoma again. Whoever came out of that, if they could beat Oklahoma twice, they were going to make it to the championship round. They didn't do that. So I was invested until then. As soon as Oklahoma beat the as soon as I knew that Oklahoma was going to beat the Aggies in the eighth inning of that game, I could not have dropped interest in the College World Series faster. I lost every ounce of interest that I had in that because college baseball is a lot of fun. But if you think that professional baseball is regionalized and very localized, college baseball is
right.
That to the umpteenth degree, right? And so as soon as there was the Aggies weren't in the College World Series, I didn't care to watch Ole Miss versus Oklahoma. I kept up with the score a little bit, especially in game two, and was trying to follow along with it somewhat. But it's just like I usually have little interest in the College World Series championship round, but the fact that the Aggies had gotten knocked out before then, it made me lose even more interest in it because I'm a bitter sports fan. When my teams lose, sports die inside, right? My sports soul dies for a little bit, and it takes a few hours or days, depending on the team and how they lost, for it to really recover. So
my problem is that I'm all or nothing. So I'll be like, well, screw this. I'm never watching this team again. I hate this coach,
really?
Blah, blah, blah. Yeah. And then 3 days later, I'm like, oh, no, I'm not mad anymore. Did I miss something?
So you're pretty much Cowboys fans. That's what Cowboys
God,
fans
don't
do.
Ever.
I'm not saying you're a Cowboys
fan. That's
worse
than accusing me of, like, being a murderer or
what?
Something. God.
Wow. Okay.
Not a Cowboys fan.
Well,
I'm going to go vomit.
I'm just saying.
Coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, we really want to like this sport. We really do, but we're having a hard time with it. We're going to talk about that. What sport do you want to like? What sport have you tried to like? That's coming up next.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
I don't blame it, Don.
Welcome back to Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
All right, we're coming back from a fun sports weekend, and it's very fun if you like hockey, as the Stanley Cup wrapped up and the Colorado Avalanche.
Avalanche.
Colorado Avalanche did win the Stanley Cup, so it was a fun weekend for them.
Yeah, I actually have friends, a few friends that are Avalanche fans. So I have friends that after they got out of the military, they moved back to Colorado, and they do like hockey, so they became fans of the team. It's cool to see. I when I watch hockey, I have fun with it. I really do.
Yeah, hockey's cool.
It is. I have never been to I grew up in Dallas, but I was young enough, or I was old enough to kind of be cognizant and there and paying attention when the Stars won the Stanley Cup. But I just didn't really care enough about hockey. I liked the fact that Darian Hatcher was a guy that they called an enforcer who could just beat people up on the ice. And so I wanted to play hockey, but my parents didn't get me into it. I've tried to get into hockey so many times in my life. I had friends that were Chicago Blackhawks fans. Sure. They were like, when Blackhawks were winning everything, like, oh, watch. And I've watched playoff hockey. It's incredible. I've tried to watch the Stanley Cup. It seems fun. I always forget, much like Blake Griffin in the NBA, I forget that hockey exists. Like, I've tried so many times in my life to get into it and to watch it and to enjoy it. But I think because I didn't play it growing up, I guess, or there wasn't real, I didn't go to any games or anything like that.
It's regional,
young.
Right? Like, if you're from Minnesota, it's a huge part of your childhood, certain parts of Michigan. In Indiana, I don't remember a single friend of mine that was like really into hockey.
Right.
Same with soccer. I mean, it just kind of depends on where you're from. I will say hockey is one of those sports that's better in person.
Yes.
Like when you watch hockey in person, it's very fun. To where like the NFL, you could argue, is a better experience watching from home.
Unless you are one of the people lucky enough to have like tickets on the 50-yard line, like four rows up.
Or
yes,
like if you're
agree.
Like, yeah, I mean, but for the most, but hockey is a cool sport in person. I have a hard time getting into it. So you and I talked about this before the show. What's a sport that you all wish that you could get into more, but you just can't?
Yeah. Mine is hockey, one of them is hockey. But the one that I've tried so hard, because internationally it's so beloved, and it looks interesting. It has a sport that's a pseudo counterpart to it in the United States. The other one for me is cricket. But it's so confusing.
Yeah.
I found out not that long ago, because I've been trying to get into it. I started playing this game on Xbox called Cricket 22 or Cricket 21. And so
you are an athlete.
Yeah, I'm an esports athlete. I play competitive video games, Cricket 22 all the way. But I tried to get into cricket, and even playing the game, I couldn't understand the rules. Like, I've successfully gotten into a lot of sports in my life. I've done rugby. I've played ultimate frisbee is something that I did for a really long time. There's like so many different sports I've gotten into or tried to get into and did it successfully. But cricket and hockey are the two that I cannot do. And I just found out, like, cricket, there are cricket matches that last like 5 days. 5 days.
Too much.
That's too,
no chance.
That's too long. My attention span is 30 seconds. TikTok is the perfect platform for me because people give me quick, consumable pieces of content.
Right.
And a 5 day cricket match? No, I can't do it. I want to, but I can't.
One of the most hated families in the NFL has been extremely successful. This is per Darren Rovell. Over the last 135 days, owner Stan Kroenke has won 3 rings. Of course, the Rams, the National Lacrosse League, the Colorado Mammoth, and then the NHL Colorado Avalanche. Yes, Stan Kroenke and his family own all 3 of those teams. I hate this guy for what he did to St. Louis. I mean, a good Midwest city full of diehard, good fans.
Right.
And he took the team away, and he did it in a way that was so brash and so brusque, and then tried to be cocky about it. And now he wants the other NFL owners to, you know, to give money to the lights. Like, no, you need to pay for that out of your pocket. And he's this successful. Why is it always it's not always nice guys that win. Sometimes nice guys finish last.
Uh-huh.
The Kroenke family, their 3rd championship in the last 135 days.
I contend that nice guys always finish last. I've been asking myself this question for a long time because I consider myself kind of a nice guy. But it's always
nice.
The jerks like that win and are successful. And every once in a while, it makes me want to turn into a jerk to just see how successful I could be if I were one. But I don't have it in my soul. I do hate that he has been this successful as a professional sports owner. And it's because there are times the reason they're so successful is they guys like that and people like this will literally stop at nothing for their success. They don't care who they step on. They don't care who they hurt, which is fine. If your entire legacy is just you want to be successful, and some people just can't be that. But it is impressive what he's been able to do as a professional sports owner to win championships in a multitude of different sports. You don't see that very often. Guys try. I mean, you have owners that don't win any championships in the one sport that they own a team in, right? You see owners that are constantly fighting for a Super Bowl, and they'll never have a chance. Like, sorry, the Detroit Lions aren't winning another one anytime soon. You know what I mean? So to see him win championships across three different professional sports is absolutely insane.
He also owns Arsenal. The Arsenal Soccer
really?
Club.
And they're like incredible. Wow.
This is just obnoxious.
Yeah, that's rough.
Sean, is there a sport that you've like tried to get into but you have a hard time with it?
Well, speaking of Arsenal, I think soccer is one where I know just enough to like disappoint real soccer fans because I don't know that much. Where I know enough to like fake my way through like half of a conversation,
sure.
Yeah. And they ask me one thing, and I'm like, I have no idea what you're talking about right now. So soccer is one. It's tough because, you know, all the elite soccer is in Europe, and so they play at like 6 in the morning on Saturdays and Sundays. So that's tough. There's also a bunch of different competitions and such. So there's different like, oh, they're playing for a cup. They're playing for the league. They're playing –
That is where I get completely thrown. Yeah. And I understand that when I talk about racing and IndyCar and NASCAR, people probably think this. They're like, what are you – they're driving for what? What is this? How is this different? That's where soccer gets me too, because then there's like the thing that came here to Houston, the CONCACAF.
Yeah.
Which was CONCACAF. Awesome.
Yes.
CONCACAF, thank you. CONCACAF, which was very fun to cover, brought in a lot of money to the city. A lot of great players, but I'm like, what is
what
that?
Is yeah. what is
what
this?
Are we playing yeah. for? What yes, is, go USA. What are we?
What
playing
is the
for?
Mission?
Well, I asked somebody that same thing. Like, in college basketball, you have the Maui Invitational every year, right? At the beginning of the year,
right.
I'm like, is this like the Maui Invitational? They were like, no, it's nothing like that. I'm like, well, then I don't understand the concept of this. I am a new soccer fan. I've been actually waking up early on weekends to watch soccer. So I've been watching some Bundesliga. And I was watching some English Premier League. I did choose an English Premier League team recently. I chose Tottenham.
There you go.
Because it is spelled Tottenham, even though everybody tells me it's Tottenham. I refuse to pronounce it like that. So my new goal is to become one of the biggest Tottenham fans in the world. I want to know everything about all of their players, all of their competitions. I want to watch every single match that they have. That way I can just obnoxiously continue to call them Tottenham. And when people call me out for not being a real fan, I will literally spew knowledge into their faces. And
you're
going to
be one of those people.
Yeah,
you're going to be like a Beatles fan.
I'm sorry, there's an H in there. It's Tottenham. Thank you very much.
I want to mention this before we get into the weeds on the Deshaun Watson stuff. Mike Meltzer's going to join us at 11:30. This Friday is our summer circuit. And this chapter of the summer circuit, guys, we're going to be at Cobos Q in Edo. I am very excited for this. We'll be there bright and early at 7 a.m. So come and hang out. Enjoy Cobos' incredible food, full bar. Get your long weekend started with some fun. So you can register to win a new grill from Texas Star Grill Shop and a weekend getaway from Lafayette Travel. This Friday, we'll see you at Cobos Q, 2012 Rusk Street. It's just a short walk from Minute Maid Park. That should be fun, guys.
That's going to be a lot of fun. I love Edo, just hands down anyway. I love Edo, but I love Cobos Q. Love.
Haven't
Cobos
had it
Q.
yet.
Oh, it's,
but I've heard really good things.
It's so good.
What's the type of food? Is it Tex-Mex?
Yeah, it's like barbecue Tex-Mex.
Yeah, it's very good.
I remember when I was an intern, they would come and bring food for John and Lance, and those were always the best days because I have to wait a respectful amount of time, let John and Lance eat, and then I'm all over it. What during their segment, I have 10 minutes to pig out on some of those quesadillas.
I'm into it. All right, so meet us at Cobos Q this Friday. What sport do you guys wish that you liked or do you guys wish that you could get into more that you've had a rough time getting into? 713-780-3776. All right. Within the last hour, we found out a lot more about the situation involving Deshaun Watson. We knew a few weeks ago that Tony Busby was going to add the Texans to one of the lawsuits. He had mentioned that he would. As Tony Busby always does, he does it in style. So he released a press release about 2 weeks before it actually happened. But as of this morning, it has been made official that the Texans are added to a lawsuit. I'm going to break down and read some of what Mike Meltzer, who's a legal expert, he has the Mike Meltzer podcast, radio guy as well, what he said about it, because we're going to have him on the next segment. Reading the new lawsuit Tony Busby filed against the Texans, the causes of action are civil assault, IIED, negligence, gross negligence, vicarious liability, and civil conspiracy. We don't have time to read through the entire thread, but I want to tell you what has stood out to me, and then Josh and Sean, of course, I want to hear what you guys say has stood out to you as well. The massage company complained to the Texans that Watson was reaching out to unqualified strangers. This was huge to me, because for a massage company to reach out and complain to an NFL team,
that's
is
big.
Significant. Again, these are all allegations, but this is according to the lawsuit.
Well, and that's the massage company that the Texans have used, that the Texans use for their players. Like Genuine Touch masseuses have traveled with them, and the team uses them all the time. There's also in that thread, it says that Genuine Touch masseuses went with them to London on their London trip too. And so it's not just like it's a massage company just reaching out saying, hey, this is happening. No, it's a massage company that you've partnered with that's saying, hey, some weird stuff is going on. The one thing from the thread that stuck out to me the most is apparently after these allegations in the lawsuit from Ms. Solis came out against Deshaun Watson, or before they came out, whenever she first said that this was happening.
Right.
One of the masseuses from Genuine Touch texted her and said, hey, you don't have to tell me, but just curious, is it Deshaun Watson? And that was in March of 2020. So the biggest thing.
And he got that extension in, September?
Right. And so the biggest thing for me is that means that this puts the knowledge of the Texans back as far as March of 2020, possibly even before March of 2020, because if a masseuse from Genuine Touch is saying, if she has enough firsthand knowledge of saying, hey, is it Deshaun Watson, then that means it was going on well before March of 2020. So that's the one that sticks out to me the most and might be the most difficult for the Texans to explain, is if they had knowledge that early and then allegedly continued to facilitate and enable the behavior, then that's going to be a huge problem for them.
There's also the mentioning that they somehow were able to delete an Instagram post from Nia Smith
right.
in 2020 as well. So the thing that I think I'm most interested in, luckily we'll get to ask Mike this in the next segment, is just how do you prove that the Texans knew this, that they right. had this knowledge? What evidence will there be, and how could it ultimately affect that hearing that is supposed to start tomorrow? All right, coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, we will talk to legal expert Mike Meltzer about his great thread on Twitter, and I'm sure he's going to be able to break it down in layman's terms for us non-lawyers. That's next.
Your home for sports. ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Real fun sports. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
All right, we're rolling along on a Monday. I'm Vanessa Richardson. Josh Beard is in for Paul Gallant. Sean Mapes behind the glass, as always. And I'm very excited for our next guest because he's extremely smart, but he has a way of relaying law information in a way that doesn't make me feel like a complete dummy. We're joined, of course, now by Mike Meltzer. He's a sports radio host for Mad Dog Radio. He's also a legal expert. He has the Mike Meltzer podcast. Mike, thanks for hopping on such short notice.
Absolutely. Vanessa, Josh, good morning. How are you?
We're doing well. Okay, so news, of course, breaking this morning that Tony Busby finally did add the Texans to one of the lawsuits. He had said a couple weeks ago that he would do so. And as of this morning, it's official. I highly recommend everybody get on Mike Meltzer's Twitter at Mike Meltzer and find the thread that he wrote, because he broke it down beautifully in layman's terms in a way that's easy and digestible to understand. Mike, I'll just start by asking you a very generic question, which is, when you look through this lawsuit, what stood out to you the most?
What I'm always looking for, Vanessa, and I think it's a good question, is these are very hard claims to make. And the reason why they're hard is, it's one thing for somebody who gave Deshaun Watson a massage, who felt like she was mistreated, to sue him, in the sense that there's a one-to-one connection there. Mm-hmm. Deshaun Watson is getting a massage from somebody. Deshaun Watson, in this case, these massage therapists, I always wonder, what is the connection between the massage therapist, in this case, it's one, mm-hmm. Toy Garner, and the Texans? And how does Tony Busby, through the evidence, and remember, the things that are put in lawsuits are not evidence. When the Texans answer this lawsuit in a couple of weeks, what they say is not evidence. There might be things in there like depositions, like text messages that very likely would be evidence. But just because something is said in a lawsuit does not mean it is evidence in the legal sense.
Okay.
Of it. So I'm reading this and I'm trying to figure out, like, what is the connection between the Texans and the things that have been alleged to have been done by Deshaun, right? I kind of think about it in terms of like Watergate. What did they know, and when did they know it? And in that spirit, Vanessa, there are a couple of specific dates in which Tony Busby is arguing that the Texans should have been on notice that Deshaun Watson was doing bad things to massage therapists, and they should have done something about it.
Hi, Mr. Meltzer, longtime fan. I miss your face. How are you doing?
Hey, Josh.
Hey, the biggest question for me is, as you've gone through this lawsuit and you've gone through these allegations, and I love that you brought up the dates, because I think there's a couple specifically for me with this question. But legally, what do you think is going to be the most difficult thing for the Texans to kind of maneuver through and work around of all of these allegations and all these little pieces coming together in the lawsuit?
So I'm looking at, Josh, I think that's a good question. And I always, when I look at a lawsuit, I'll typically read like the first couple of sentences, and I'll go all the way down to like the claims, like what's actually being claimed. What are the causes of action? So in this case, there are 6 or 7: civil assault, intentional infliction of emotional distress, negligence, vicarious liability, civil conspiracy. And I'll probably myself mentally knock out a couple of those. You know, civil assault, I think, is tough to prove because Deshaun Watson is the person who is alleged to have done these things. Mm-hmm. Intentional infliction of emotional distress, I remove almost immediately. Civil conspiracy, that requires intent. That means that the Texans would have intended or wanted, they have the intent for Deshaun Watson to have done these things that is claimed against them. I think that's a hard thing to prove. The negligence part might be the harder ones to defend. But even from that standpoint, Josh, I typically look at it in this kind of situation. I think it's going to be a harder burden for Tony Busby on behalf of his client to show that the Texans owed some kind of duty to the massage therapist and they violated that duty. That is not going to be an easy thing for him to prove, because we might think morally that there is some sort of duty owed. But if there's no legal duty that is owed, then you cannot be liable for negligence. Like, it can't happen.
What? So when I'm reading through your thread on Twitter, it mentions, I think it's Megan Weisheit, if I'm butchering her name pronunciation, I apologize. But yes. It claims that she routinely provided massage therapy services to multiple players and accompanied the team when they traveled to London. You also mentioned that the lawsuit says that multiple Texans players had sexual relations with one of the massage therapists. I mean, is there any way to prove that the Texans did or didn't know this? I mean, they had this woman traveling with them to London.
That is a great question, Vanessa. I'm really glad you asked, because this to me is maybe the most interesting part of the lawsuit to me. And Megan Weisheit, and I also apologize if I'm pronouncing that wrong, but this is somebody who was not like under a formal contract. But as you mentioned, she apparently gave massage therapy services to multiple Texans players, went with them to London. So that would have been in 2019. And the question on that would be, what exactly did she know? Because what Tony Busby put in this lawsuit is that when Megan Weisheit found out from Ashley Solis's coworker, mm-hmm. This is March of 2020, so not March 2021, March of 2020, a year before the first lawsuit, that when the coworker of Ashley Solis finds out that Ashley Solis feels like she's been mistreated by Deshaun, reaches out to Megan, and then Megan Weisheit writes via text, and this text message is in the lawsuit, quote, you don't have to tell me, but out of curiosity, was it Deshaun Watson? Mm. And so this is a text that she sent to the coworker of Ashley Solis. And then what I find super interesting, and I'm just going to quote this from the lawsuit. In response to Ashley Solis' complaints about Deshaun Watson, White Sheet stated that she intended to reach out to the Texans to advise them of the situation. Assuming she did so, such action would have, again, specifically put the Texans on notice of Watson's misconduct as early as March 2020. So I read that and I say, okay, she said she intended to reach out. Did she do it? How did she do it? What's the way that she did it? And when Tony Buzzi writes, assuming she did so, well, that's an assumption. This goes back to my Watergate analogy. What did they know and when did they know about it? Just because Megan Whitesheet said it does not mean she communicated that. And I want to also, Vanessa, make like an overall point here. And this goes from this lawsuit to what was written by Jenny Vrentis in the New York Times a couple weeks ago. I think one fundamental defense the Texans would have is, hey, even if we were on notice that Deshaun Watson was being threatened via Instagram in November 2020, even if we were aware that Deshaun Watson was seeking out massages through Instagram, through social media, that doesn't mean by definition that we're liable for him assaulting massage therapists. Why should one lead to the other? So I think that will be kind of the essence of their arguments against this lawsuit.
Is it a big deal? You also wrote that in June 2020, the owner of Genuine Touch, according to the lawsuit, complained to the Texans. So the owner of a massage parlor reaches out to an NFL team that Watson was seeking out unqualified strangers for massages via Instagram, putting himself in danger of getting COVID or getting sued or whatever. Is there a way to prove that they reached out? Is that just an allegation? Or do we have to wait until the evidence part and discovery to see if that can be proven?
Yeah, I think you do. And that is it's a claim that's made in this lawsuit that Joni Hahn, who owns Genuine Touch, what is Genuine Touch? Massage therapy place. They had a contract, like an actual contract with the Texans, apparently. Joni Hahn owns it. And in the lawsuit, it says she complained to the Texans that Watson was seeking out unqualified strangers for massages via Instagram. So here are my questions when I read that. She complained. How did she do it? What's the way she did it? Who did she complain to? What position was that person in? And again, like even if all of that is established, like through the evidence, then if she complained that, hey, Deshaun Watson might get COVID. Remember, this is in 2020, like the world is ending, or getting himself sued. If the Texans are aware that Deshaun Watson might be sued by a massage therapist, does that necessarily mean that they're responsible for Deshaun Watson's behavior in those massages? Maybe you could make that argument, but I think you can probably tell by the tone of my voice, it's not an easy argument to make, certainly.
Right, because there's a lot of assumptions that have to be made in that, and assumptions don't work in a courtroom all the time. You have to really sell them. It really feels like, and I'm glad you talked about Megan Whitesheet, because it really feels like she could be the smoking gun for Tony Buzbee in this entire thing. So my question would be, if this were you, if you were Tony Buzbee and you were trying to help build a case against the Texans and force them to defend something, where would you go with this if you were Tony Buzbee?
Well, I think what you have to try to establish, Josh, if it's possible, is did the Texans know that anything allegedly nefarious was going on with Deshaun and these massages? I think that's how you would have to try to, you know, build the case. Like, what are the exact connections between the Texans and what was alleged to have happened in those rooms? Like, yeah, it doesn't look good for them, I suppose, that Roland Ramirez, who works for the team, admitted to the HPD under oath that he and Jackie used to be helped secure a membership at the Houstonian for Deshaun Watson. Like, it may not look good and something that's going to draw headlines, but does it mean that either, you know, any of these people were aware of what Deshaun, you know, may have been doing? It looks weird that Deshaun Watson, per Roland Ramirez's testimony, asked the Texans for a massage table, then took it, then returned it. Like, that looks pretty bizarre. But does it mean that they knew what was happening? And so I'd really want to dig in, Josh, to answer your question as directly as I can. You know, what did the owner of Genuine Touch tell the Texans? And by the Texans, like, who are we talking about? Team security,
right.
General manager, you know, whoever. Like, what method did she email them? Did she call them? Even if it's not necessarily in, like, written form, you know, a phone call could be evidence as well. What did she tell them? Same thing for Megan Weiss. She intended to tell the Texans. Did she do it? Who did she tell? How did they react? That's how I would try to build the case.
All right, last question, Mike Meltzer. What happens next?
The thing that literally happens next is that the Texans, by you have to file an answer to a lawsuit. Typically, the Texas Rules of Civil Procedure say it's basically like 20 days, and I haven't done the exact calculation, but they will have to file an answer on either July 18th or July 25th, unless they get an extension.
Okay.
And it'll be interesting to see maybe what they put in that answer. In Texas, you can do what's called a general denial, which means you deny everything. You don't have to specifically deny it. They'll put in what's called affirmative defenses, which basically means even if all of these things happened, we are still not liable because we basically don't have a duty to these massage therapists. I'm really going basic here. And it'll be interesting. Like, I remember in the Deshaun Watson answer last year when he answered the first couple of lawsuits, they actually attached, you know, screenshots, Instagram
things. Yeah, I remember that, too, because they gave us evidence packets.
Yeah, they started to try to establish evidence in the answer. I don't know if the Texans, with whoever attorneys they hire, are going to do that. But I'm basically curious, like, what affirmative defenses do they use? And do they actually try to argue part of the case in that answer?
Yeah. All right. Fascinating stuff. And Mike, we really appreciate you hopping on because you brought a lot of clarity to this. He's at Mike Meltzer on Twitter. He hosts a podcast. He's with Mad Dog Radio. And of course, he is an attorney. Mike, thank you for your time.
Vanessa, Josh, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, we're going to put a bow on a Monday with a little garbage time. That's next.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. Breaking down the Houston sports scene with V and Pauly G on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
All right, we're wrapping up a Monday. If you missed Mike Meltzer coming on our show talking about all things involving Deshaun Watson and the addition of the Texans to one of those lawsuits, we will have that up on Twitter as well as on our podcasts. Highly recommend it. All right, let's do a little sports media nerd segment, shall we? Josh Beard, in case you're not familiar, I love all things sports media. Sean and Paul make fun of me incessantly for it. But I did enjoy this interaction between Pat McAfee and Mike Florio, who Mike Florio just seems to like to start things with people for literally no reason. On June 23rd, McAfee tweets, "Good morning, beautiful people. It's all going to work out. You know why? Because it has to. Let's have a great day. Happy Throwback Thursday." And it was a screenshot from 5 years ago when McAfee retired. And Mike Florio's article for Pro Football Talk said, "Pat McAfee leaves $2.75 million on the table, potentially owes the Colts $400,000. Pat didn't really say anything bad about Mike Florio. It was just, you know, a tweet talking about how things always work out. Florio quote tweets it and says, "Congrats on your success, Pat. It's sad to me that we were friends not so long ago, but for some reason, we are now not, especially when I repeatedly tried to help you while you were on the way up."
Oh, my.
To which McAfee responds, "I got nothing for love for you. You cover things in a vastly different fashion than us. We appreciate your service to the best league on earth, us, sports media as a whole. This just so happens to be a nice reminder of where I was. Cheers."
Why are people so soft in this industry?
Florio's
why?
Mega soft.
Oh, my.
Sean,
S-A-W-F-T
you like
soft.
You had thoughts on this.
Just such an unforced error from Florio to, like, "Hey, I always helped you out." And, like, when you spill out what Pat McAfee tweeted, it was just using his website as an example
right.
of, you know, the bet that he made on himself.
Which he did. I was in Indy when this happened.
Yes. And in no
I covered way, the press conference.
Until Mike Florio goes like, "Oh, come on, Pat. I'm sad to see this. I thought we were friends, man." I would not have thought like, "Oh, wow, Florio's really crapping on him." It is a factual thing that He left money on the table to start his media empire.
It's because everybody's – I feel like everybody's looking for a fight. Everybody's looking
for
the slight.
Well, especially this time of year when there's nothing going on. I mean, there's not a lot going on. Like, God bless ESPN on First Take. They did, like – their first A block was all about Kyrie, and their second block was about the Colorado Avalanche. I mean, there is nothing going on.
You mean you don't want to talk about Kyrie in between the NBA draft and right. the opening of free agency? That's not your thing?
Yeah, major beef. Somebody that I'm enjoying beefing on Twitter is Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant has gone back and forth with Skip Bayless, and I love it.
Yeah.
I think he keeps it real. So he's been a fun addition to the Twitter beef game.
I would care. I care so much more. The only reason I care about Kyrie's destination is because I want to figure out what happens with Kevin Durant.
Right.
If Kyrie ends up getting traded to the Lakers or something like that. But Kevin Durant's been fun on social media, whether he means to or not, for a while now. Like, trying to talk crap to people on burner accounts, but forgetting to switch to his burner account.
It almost makes him more likable.
Yeah.
More
it makes
relatable.
Him human. It makes him.
Yeah.
And that's my favorite thing is my favorite thing with athletes is when they feel more organic. When they feel
totally
more relatable,
agree.
When they feel more human. Like, we want those moments from them, right? And Kevin Durant kind of gives you those. I know a lot of people look at the stuff that he does and like in his fighting with Skip as, oh, that's cringe. You shouldn't do that. But I love it. I love stuff like that. And I mean, I said it last week. I want more drama in the NBA. I want these players to chirp a little bit more. I want to see them talk trash a little bit more because I don't just want Steph Curry, after they win a championship, holding the zero in front of his eyeball. I want him to be talking the entire way through the playoffs, the entire way through the championship.
Drama is good for sports.
Yes, it is.
My favorite morning show, Good Morning Football, is going to have a new host, according to the New York Post. Ooh. Jamie Erdl will replace Kay Adams as host of NFL Network's Good Morning Football. I'm a big morning show watcher, as Paul and Sean can attest to. I come in and I've watched all the morning shows.
I do like
because
morning
I am an old lady.
Well, morning shows are the only ones that I typically like to watch, too, because I feel like it's the best way to just, I don't know, it's relaxing. You get your coffee, or you wake up first. I guess you don't get your coffee before you wake up. That would be weird. You wake up, you get your coffee, you maybe you're like Michael Scott, and you like to cook some bacon on a George Foreman grill next to
great
your bed.
Great episode.
Right? And then you watch some Good Morning Football or some morning shows. I love morning shows. And so I do pretty much the same thing because it's like a nice relaxing few. It's like a respite to what the rest of the day is going to be.
All right, it is time for our last segment of the show, which we call Garbage Time.
Oh, I love trash.
Garbage Time.
It's garbage.
Starts now.
Ah, I'm the trash man.
This is garbage.
Atlanta police are investigating a shooting that left one woman dead and another in critical condition in Atlanta. The reason for the shooting, you ask? Too much mayonnaise on a sandwich.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, a person was shot. Two women had been shot after a dispute about the amount of mayonnaise on a customer's Subway sandwich. Have you ever wanted to shoot somebody over the amount of mayonnaise put on a sandwich? I would know because I'm not disgusting, so I don't get mayonnaise on sandwiches.
Ooh, wow. So
you're a mayonnaise guy.
Oh, no. Well, it goes a little deeper than that, Vanessa. Oh. I used to eat mayonnaise sandwiches. It's sandwiches.
That is...
With look, I grew up as a poor kid in a small town
in
Texas.
You can't get the poor thing on me.
But
a mayonnaise sandwich?
Mayonnaise sandwiches. Yeah, and it was usually with Miracle Whip, so it wasn't even real mayonnaise.
So it's just bread and...
Massive globs. I mean, globs of mayonnaise. The funny thing is my son can't stand mayonnaise. So the other day I was eating a sandwich, and there was like, you know how sometimes you get the slice of bread with a hole in it? I had one of those, and a little bit of mayonnaise got kind of like came off on my face while I was eating the sandwich, and my son was like about to throw up. And so I was just like, I just took it and just smeared it all across my face. He literally goes, I hate you. And he left the table and he went and hid in his room for like an hour.
Which is the only response.
Yeah, it's the best response to mayonnaise. So I guess my son might be somebody who would shoot somebody over too much mayonnaise on a sandwich.
Yeah, it sounds maybe, like, but, sounds like you got pretty close right there.
But yeah, I used to eat mayonnaise sandwiches until I realized how disgusting and fattening they were. So I don't eat those anymore, luckily.
So a mayonnaise sandwich is shocking to me.
Why? Just massive globs of Miracle
Whip. There's no protein.
So
there's no.
Yeah, but it was delicious.
Well, why couldn't you do like peanut butter and jelly?
Because I wanted the mayonnaise.
Are you a mayonnaise guy, Sean?
I like very small amounts of mayonnaise. I just like it just a little bit, but if I have my choice, like it is by far the third condiment if we're going.
Oh, the third
mustard, ketchup, and mayonnaise.
Oh, I mustard, use... ketchup, ranch, honey mustard, oh, A1.
If we're counting all of them, I mean, I'm just thinking, yeah.
Mayonnaise goes first on every sandwich and every burger. I use a ladle.
Every burger?
Every
burger. Really?
Mayonnaise on, I put mayonnaise on my hot dog buns. That's the only way to go. I use ladles to get my mayonnaise.
I'm going to vomit. So with that, we end a Monday of Vanessa and Gallant. Thanks again, Josh Beard. We'll be here with us all week, the lover of mayonnaise, and we certainly appreciate Mike Meltzer hopping on to talk all things Deshaun Watson. Coming up next from 12 to 3 on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, you got the Killer Bees. That's next.
Years of research and innovation.
Innovation Map is the new voice of innovation in Houston.
Pretty cool, huh, Morty?
Covering startups, tech, energy, health, social impact, and more. Visit innovationmap.com today.
Do it now! Do it! Do it! Do it now!